Maritime Matters, global perspectives through a German lens for the maritime industry. We bring the German perspective to the world and global insights to Germany. Maritime Matters is produced by the German Maritime Center, the think tank for the German maritime sector.
Welcome to our podcast. My name is Matthias Katon. I'm the managing director of the German Maritime Center and your host. Today, we will talk about European maritime industrial strategy. And our guest is Dr. Reinhard Lüken, a leading voice in the European maritime industry. Reinhard Lüken holds a PhD in political science, economics, and sociology. And he began his career in 1992 at the Treuhandanstalt in Berlin, where he worked on the privatization of the East German economy after reunification. In 1998, he entered the maritime sector with his first appointment at Meyerwerft Shipyard, focusing on politics and strategy. And 2 years later, he moved to Brussels to represent the community of European shipyards associations. And he became the secretary general there and later also the first secretary general of SEA Europe, which is the Joint Association for Shipyards and Maritime Equipment Producers. In 2012, he moved back to Germany and took over the position at the German Shipbuilding and Oceans Industry Association, or in German VSM, where he represents around 850 companies, if I'm correct, from that sector. Most importantly, at least when it comes to the maritime sector, he is also the chairman of our institute. He has been in that position since the foundation in 2017. So he is also my boss, full disclosure. But in the interest of you, our listeners, I will spare him no critical question. And I'm very happy that you're on the show, Reinhard. Welcome.
Thank you for having me. And with the critical questions, okay, let's see.
We'll see. Maybe it will be the last thing I'll do in this position, but at least we'll have a good episode for the podcast then. So we will talk about a European maritime industrial strategy. Do we have one? Do we need one? So let's maybe begin with a question that sets the scene. Is the maritime industry still strategically important for Europe in the 21st century?
Of course. And the question is also something that here at the German Maritime Center doesn't need to be asked. Of course, we answer it because otherwise it wouldn't exist, this center. And I believe we can even say ever more so. The understanding of the strategic importance of the maritime industry and the maritime sector as a whole has been growing the last few years. Yeah, the same goes also for the industrial side of things, because at the end of the day, you can talk a lot about the maritime sector without the hardware and somebody that makes it. You can't do anything. So that's why the industry is strategic.
Clear answer to my question. Next question, is European shipbuilding still competitive in this day and age?
100%. We are market leaders in many high-end sectors. We have, of course, lost a lot of market share, no doubt. We have lost some important market segments. Basically, most of the volume markets are no longer produced in Europe, which is a strategic shortcoming. So maybe an issue that needs to be addressed as well. But when it comes to competence, when it comes to skills, when it comes to knowledge, Europe is still on the top of the shipbuilding league, even if, of course, we can't show this in terms of market share or tonnage volume.
So would you agree with people who say, well, European shipbuilding is a niche business nowadays and the bulk is in Asia?
Yes, I think that's a fair statement. There are important niche markets that we dominate, but it's true. Then if you look to the global landscape tonnage-wise, then, of course, Europe is not playing a super important role, no doubt.
We talked about strategic importance, and that is a term that gets thrown around a lot, sometimes without a definition. So what does that mean? What would happen if, let's say, the shipbuilding capacities in Europe would decline further? maybe both in numbers, in volume, you mentioned that, but maybe also in the niches, those competence clusters where the European industry is still leading. What would happen? What would happen strategically?
Well, have a look at countries where exactly this has happened. If we look to UK as a case in Europe, UK was leading global shipbuilding in the 50s, market share of more than 50%. Today, on the commercial side, there's next to nothing. For a, let's say, medium-sized country that is surrounded by friends in Europe, which still have the capability to produce ships, this can be handled. But it gets a little bit more touchy if you want to play on a larger scale and have a look at the United States. Why does President Trump spend now unbelievable amounts of money to revitalize shipbuilding? Because he understands that having little capacity in that market, in that segment, in that technology field, is a major strategic weakness when it comes to facing others that do have this capacity.
Interesting that you mentioned the US. Obviously, the US is an interesting case in many respects nowadays. But isn't it interesting because the fact that there is so little shipbuilding or almost no shipbuilding apart from the military side, isn't that a consequence precisely of something that was initially meant to protect the US shipbuilding industry, the Jones Act, if I'm not mistaken, which mandates that certain types of ships have to be built in the US?
Yes, I believe it certainly plays a big role to the situation where we are now. So the US had no real necessity to take care of shipbuilding, to foster it more than they do, because this legal requirement that any ship that trades between two American ports has to be built in the US by law sort of safeguarded a particular market volume. But let's not forget, the US has been very strong in shipbuilding during Second World War. So we have these Liberty ship production, an enormous amount of ships that were produced in the US at that stage. I don't remember the numbers, to be honest, but it's like a ship a day at enormous speed, at perhaps not the quality standards that you would expect, but they were very clear. They said, look, we need to do this with volume, and it doesn't matter whether the ship lasts 2 years because maybe they will be sunk by that time. It's a little bit brutal to say that way, but that's really the starting point. And of course, it has been an impressive voyage. But after the war, this all disappeared again.
We want to talk primarily, of course, about Europe and European shipbuilding. But since we are talking about the US right now, the current administration is trying to change that. But they're also trying to change that by introducing even more protectionist measures, such as those fees that ships will now have to pay when they are not US built and they dock at US ports. Do you think they will be successful ultimately in ramping up their shipbuilding capacity with those kinds of measures?
Very difficult to answer. The starting point is for sure not great. So they have a very long way to go, and it will for sure not be a quick path. But one thing is important to underline. This is not just an idea of the current administration. This is a bipartisan concept. So the understanding that it can't go on as it is and that they have to do something is bipartisan. It's a broad consensus in the US. I think this is extremely important to underline. Yeah, of course, America is America. So if they have an idea, then they pursue it and they are not afraid of challenges. The challenges, I think, are quite big. Why do I refer to the US? Because I think for us, this holds a big lesson. We are in a much better position. We have much more productive industrial capacities. We have, and that's key, we have an excellent educational system, both academic as well as on the ground, on blue collar. And that is the key. You need to have people that know what they do. And in the US, this is a little bit the bottleneck. And it's not so easy to take a lot of money in your hand, and the people need to be trained, they need to be found, they need to be motivated. That takes a long, long time.
As you said, moving now back to the European landscape that we are primarily interested here in today's session, what would you say, what are the biggest challenges that the European shipbuilding industry is facing today?
Not only today. Europe has been facing an extremely unlevel playing field for decades. This has been an issue Well, basically for the last 50 years. The OECD has set up a shipbuilding working group back in 1966, understanding that due to its strategic nature, shipbuilding is a highly distorted global market. And since more than 50 years, the OECD pursues how can certain rules be established so that this level playing field is at least improving, even if not perfect. And I've been attending OECD meetings for the last 20 years, and we simply failed. I think we have to understand that our mission was not successful still up to now. And of course, the situation today is a different one than, let's say, 10 or 20 years ago. 20 years ago, you could always say, okay, there's an unlevel playing field. It has a commercial implication. Too bad. Today, it has a security implication. And there you cannot say too bad, because this is about existing or not existing. And therefore, in Europe, I think we are understanding much better that we can no longer accept no action in that field.
Now, you did not mention that explicitly today, but you've said it before. Of course, what you're alluding to is that you say that, in particular, China is subsidizing its own shipbuilding industry in an effort to ramp it up and ultimately push out other players. So we both studied economics some time ago. And if you think back to your economics classes at university, people would argue, what's bad about that, right? Essentially, if the Chinese choose to subsidize their ships for exportation, they make them cheaper, they give us a present, right? We get something for free. So if they choose to spend their own money on making ships cheaper that we can buy, perfect. What's not to like about that?
Absolutely. And this is exactly the type of economic advice that policymakers have been listening in the EU, particular, even more than in Berlin. But Berlin also is a fan of this attitude, or has been a fan of this attitude. And I believe this analysis is fine in peaceful environment. If you have a complex industry, which requires many thousands of actors, and I mean not only people, I mean thousands of companies, because we are talking about very complex products where you have a whole range, almost full range of technologies that you need to integrate. So you have a very broad landscape of skills that you need, of specialization, of production capacities. And you cannot switch this off and on just because somebody else gives you a present. So as they are saying, beware of the Greek when they bring presents, I would say this is not only true for Greeks. Be careful what you are taking along, because it might put you in an extremely weak spot. And again, if we look to the United States, that's exactly where they are right now, in the growing systematic conflict, US versus China, if this evolves. The maritime sector is a huge strategic weakness. The US understood it, and they start to do something about it. You cannot switch on, switch off just because you got a present from somebody. And again, I mean, I had these discussions with economists too. They are very slow in accepting that fact, because it's also difficult to measure, of course. So we have a big issue there.
So what you worry about, at least partially, is, I understand, the loss of capacity. Say once it's gone, it's really hard to get it back. So if we talk about the maritime industry, is it kind of like a rear guard action as we try to protect the competencies and the cutting edge that we still have in certain fields that you mentioned? And maybe we can also make them a bit more explicit. Or do you see a chance of actually getting back parts of shipbuilding that have left Germany and Europe, at least at the moment? Or differently, do you think would argue in favor of trying to build large container ships again in Germany?
Well, I reply with a counter question. Why not? What is the structural competitive disadvantage that we have in Europe? In the old days, let's say 20 years ago or 15 years ago, you would argue, of course, wages. But we have also low labor cost countries in Europe. Look at Romania, for instance, wonderful shipbuilding facilities, good shipbuilders, but price-wise, they still can't match. I believe it has never been really the key issue. It has been a factor, no doubt. Wages is a factor, but the complexity is on different scales. The key advantage that Far Eastern players, and not only China, Korea was there on the same path, is economy of scale. And the economy of scale is not earned. It is government organized. And if you have a huge production facility and you are able to do 50 ships of a certain kind instead of three, it's very difficult to beat you. And we have, of course, never done that. We have never had a forward-going approach in industrial policy. What is the strategic implications of this sector? Again, I think times are changing. We know now that industrial capacity, particularly when you also produce armament, are absolutely crucial. A war is not won by armies alone. It's won by how long can you sustain the action, and for that you need an industry.
You worked in Brussels for a long time, so you know other European countries very well as well. Now in Bonn and then later in Berlin, this kind of policy was by different governments actually a long time frowned upon, right? It was a lot of hands-off approach to the economy, quite to the contrary of France, where industrial policy was always a major issue. Do you see some kind of a paradigm shift also in German politics towards a more activist regime, one could say, that politics tries to influence industrial conglomerates, for example, setting up national champions, stuff like that?
I'm not sure whether the national champion issue is really the best example, but in general, I think this economic theory and policy or politic realities are understood also in Berlin. You're right, of course, with the starting point, the difference between Berlin and Paris. I remember perfectly well that I had discussions in the Chancellery 20 years ago, where, of course, I already advocated at that time that, you know, we need to do something about this sector. And then the answer was, and I will never forget that, you mean industrial policy, right? Like in France, right?
And they didn't like that.
No, 20 years ago, like in France, right, was like, come on, you see it yourself. It doesn't work at that time. But again, now we are in a different time, and maybe the French were smarter than we think, because obviously there is with China a champion of industrial policy that has changed the entire globe. And we have been feeling this much earlier than perhaps most other industrial sectors. So that's why we came pretty early, and at that time people would not listen. Now it's quite different. I think the people that still don't want to listen are declining in numbers.
Okay, that's at least good news that finally after 20 years you're getting through with your message. Better late than never, I guess.
Yeah, you could also say it's a pity that we are right. We were right.
One of the segments in our podcast is
Nautical Numbers,
where we ask our guests to bring a number or a statistic that we can discuss. What is your nautical number?
Well, since everybody knows that I'm always raising the development in China, I think there are some statistical numbers from China that can be put forward. For instance, the fact that they were able to acquire 70% of all new orders last year. This year, the number is going significantly down, but still beyond 50%, so it's not small. And I have the feeling that also on the customer side, people are getting a little bit nervous that maybe too many eggs are laying in the same basket.
70% is an impressive number. Do you know where they were roughly 10 years ago?
Well, market share is, of course, not the crucial point, but what I can say is when the Chinese leadership decided that they should become market leader in shipbuilding, they were at about 1.5 million CGT. Europe at that time was about at 5 million CGT. This is the beginning of this century, so it's not historic numbers. It took them about 10 years to arrive at 20 million from 1.5. And at the same time, of course, Europe basically halved its production. So that are some numbers. They are not nautical, It's a word game, of course, but DMZ is not only about nautical issues. That's an important small comment that I need to make here.
Of course.
You could talk also about numeric numbers, but anyway.
Let's move back a little bit to policy and regulation, what we discussed earlier. So in your view, and I feel that I already know the answer to that question, but I'll pose it regardless. How effective would you say is European industrial strategy, particularly in the maritime sector?
Well, we don't have one. We had one. We had one 20 years ago. 2003, we issued a maritime industrial strategy. It was called Leadership. Leadership 2015, so it was sort of a strategy for the next 12 years. And it was, I would say, successful. It was not a breakthrough. It was not completely turning around the course of developments, but it had a positive impact, at least. But this initiative basically faded away, I would say. We tried to revive it around 2010, that, of course, under very different circumstances. We had the Lehman crisis in between, so really there was quite a shakeup caused by that, particularly here in this country. So then there was an attempt 2013, 10 years later, which revived Leadership with the perspective 2020. But then the follow-up of that was very, very meager, not to say inexistent. And in the commission, that is worse, there was nobody working on the file anymore. Yeah, it's an overdue exercise that the commission is understanding. Maybe they have some forgotten homework.
So then what needs to be done in your view?
We need to look at what does Europe need in terms of strategic capabilities. It's not only about capacity, it's about abilities. And of course, about the size of these abilities. And then if we have understood what we need, then of course you have to define how we get from where we are today and where we want to be. How do we get from A to B? We have a lot of possibilities in that respect. Europe is a huge maritime market. We have about 10,000 seagoing vessels that trade within Europe, never really leaving Europe. We have another about 15,000, some say even 18,000 vessels for inland navigation. So there's a lot of units that trade in Europe. And that's, of course, a market that you can also shape. And then, of course, the key to go forward and to safeguard these capabilities that we think are essential is investment. We need to scale up investment in basically in our production sites and capacities.
Let's begin maybe with the first argument that you made. You said markets can be shaped by politics, I assume, through regulation. What does that mean in your view? What would be your suggestion? How can those markets be shaped?
Well, you know, if you look to any of the bigger shipbuilding nations, they all shape their national markets. They all provide incentives to make sure that the national market is basically able to be handled locally. So that's quite normal. Of course, not everybody goes as far as the US to require the building nation by law. That's maybe a bit extreme, and we already established that that may also not be always the smartest solution over a long time. But of course, you can go through incentives, you can intervene in certain requirements on carriage, on trade requirements. And of course, then there is also a big market, don't forget that, of government-owned vessels. If I look to Germany, we have about 700 units that are owned only by the federal state. Further units, of course, on Länder level, and you have navies. So there's a lot potential that you can do. You can intervene on financing instruments, making these locations more attractive. So a lot of possibilities. We only need to look around what others do.
Okay. So, but you are, in fact, then, in essence, no matter how you name it, but you are arguing for more protectionist measures within Europe that ensure that those ships that are being used in Europe, that they're also at least partially being built in Europe.
We only need to look what is happening elsewhere. And for the time being, we are the least protectionist maritime area in the world. And I'm not always sure that's very smart. You know, we are subsidizing shipping. but we are making no requirements whatsoever of where the value added is taking place. Zero. We have no combination whatsoever on incentives to shipping and value added. The Commission has requested that already back in 88, I think, and it was never implemented.
You mentioned earlier that European or German shipbuilding is still cutting edge in certain areas, for sure. As far as I understand, that's definitely cruise shipping, one of those areas. Also, certain others, luxury or super yachts, I think is also an area where European shipbuilders dominate or at least have a large market share. What else could be done to maybe broaden the areas where European shipbuilders have a lead in terms of technology? And I'm looking at one particular area, and that is the whole green shipping part, decarbonization and all those kind of things that are not trivial, also not from the technological perspective. Do you see a possibility there for European shipbuilders to broaden the terrain where they are really technologically cutting edge?
Of course. I think first we should clarify a little bit terminology. What we are talking about is the shipbuilding industry, which is much bigger than the shipbuilders. Obviously, there is a big chunk of a ship that is built outside the shipyard. Somewhere, depends on which production philosophy you follow, somewhere between 70 to 80% is coming from the whole value chain. So I'm talking about the shipbuilding industry, all of the players. And obviously we are offering in the entire value chain a lot of highly specialized products that are really paying in the whole greening requirement. And there, let me also say, the greening is a little bit a terminology which also might be misleading. This is primarily about efficiency. Of course, it's also about climate change and about greenhouse gas emissions. But even there, step number one in everything we do is efficiency. And there is still a lot of technology that is available and not fully used. If I look to the global shipbuilding order book, I would say at least half of the vessels on order now, that means they are yet to come and they will be sailing 2050 when we are supposed to be climate neutral. They are conventional in nature, boring technology. We can do better than that. We have been proposing this for a long time, and it's difficult to make the economic case as long as fuel is very cheap. Now, if on the regulatory side, and that's obvious, zero greenhouse gas emission will only be possible if we switch to alternative fuels, then we also know that fuel prices will go through the roof. And that is, of course, then a wonderful economic case for all these very efficient machinery and other solutions that you have to simply save energy, not waste energy as we do. And still, if you look to the global fleet, there is a huge amount of energy wasted today, at least from a technical point of view.
What's the reason for that? Is it because generally progress is too slow? Is it also because it's not really clear which types of alternative fuels will ultimately dominate, that maybe also shipping companies are reluctant to focus on one particular technology? What would you say? What's the missing impetus there?
It's a whole bunch of factors that pay into this reality, I would say. Of course, shipping companies are very cost sensitive. So when they see an opportunity to save money and there's a very clear return on investment case, then they're also doing it. So I'm not saying that nothing happens. Don't get me wrong here. But fuel today is still cheap and it will remain cheap for some time to come. So you have to also consider what is the right time for your decisions, because obviously doing these steps, it's an investment. The product is becoming more expensive. Of course, it's not always the same owner that also operates the vessel. So if you put it on the charter market, is a really significantly better ship getting also a significantly better charter rate? Not necessarily. So does it pay off for the investor? Not necessarily. So that's the difficulty too. So it's also a structural issue. And then, of course, there's also purely technological issues, because let's be honest, the producer of a wonderful, efficient piece of equipment, let's say, or a wonderful, efficient vessel as a whole, well, These guys are salesmen, and of course they will make also maybe some very glossy, shiny words that maybe not every customer is believing to the fullest extent. Let's be careful here. You know where I'm getting to.
Yes, absolutely. Although, I mean, you mentioned, you talked about shaping markets. I found that a very nice way of describing it. And of course, fuel would be one area where the market could actually be shaped if policymakers wanted to do it. I mean, policymakers could make fuel more expensive, or they are already making it more expensive, but they could obviously do more if that would be desirable. And that might force some of those developments, right?
Let's make no mistakes. Every market is shaped by policy. Policy, you see, that's also the role policy is supposed to do. It sets rules. And we have, people say we have many rules in the maritime sector, but then if we are really a little bit self-critical, we are often lagging behind what is already reality onshore. I remember very well a very vivid, very lively debate when we discussed about sulfur emissions. It was a little bit ridiculous, to be honest. For road traffic, we had a big discussion in public about diesel, car diesel, road diesel, which had 10 parts per million sulfur content. In shipping at that time, we were discussing the sulfur emission control areas where 0.1% of sulfur content was the required threshold. So 100 times, not 10% more or double, 100 times, factor 100 to road diesel. And there was a huge outcry in the shipping community that this is impossible to do and blah, blah, blah. So yes, we have a lot of rules. Running this business is challenging also from the regulatory side. However, we also have to look to the broader landscape. We are often really behind times.
Another fixed segment in our podcast is what we call
Navigator's Table.
We ask our guests to make one recommendation about a restaurant, a bar, a place that is somehow connected to the maritime world, either in a port or somewhere near the beach. What would be your recommendation to our listeners?
Yeah, I was aware of this question, that this question would come. You know, we from the shipbuilding industry are so hard workers, we practically never really enjoy ourselves. So that's why I'm maybe not a good advisor. But I have been, I must admit, on a business trip where I stayed the weekend in Tokyo and went to the old port. And there was a nice fish restaurant, which I liked. I'm not sure whether it's much better than the many others that are in the same quarter. Yeah, but also there was a very nice lady serving us. So maybe my recommendations is influenced by that. I was there with my daughter though. So
absolutely, full disclosure. Of course, the entire atmosphere is what counts. So thank you very much. We'll make sure to put it in the show notes so that people can try it out next time they are in Tokyo. Final topic that I want to address a little bit is the skills issue. And you mentioned that at the beginning. You said Europe is basically in a very good position because we have a good educational system. We have smart people. We have well-educated people. Talking about the shipbuilding industry, not just shipbuilding, shipbuilding industry, what kind of skills or skill sets will we need over, say, the next 10 years if we want to at least maintain European shipbuilding industry where it is, or even, you know, get it back to the old glory that you mentioned? What kind of skills do you think we will need?
What kind of skills? Well, in our industry, you have really a huge, broad requirement of very different skill sets. So a large shipyard will probably train young people in 1.5 dozens of different skill sets. So that's why I think the answer I cannot pinpoint so much. But of course, it's quite clear our products get more demanding. So the engineering share is growing. We are now at about 1/3 of our staff across the industry that has an engineering background. What is key is that we are attracting young people and show them the fascination of this fantastic product. I mean, it's the most exciting business in the world. But most people don't see it because they have no connection to it. So we have to bring them into our facilities. We have to show them what it is and how emotional it is once you finish your product and it's leaving the yard. This is an emotional moment if you see, for instance, a fantastic super yacht or also a maybe a little bit more technocratic vessel for a research institute or so, how much technology is there and how complex this product is that we've managed. And this fascination is, that is what we need to get across young people. And we do not have enough of them, very clear. And this is also a real threat. When I said we have potential to grow, we also have the requirement to grow, because only then we will be able to attract enough young people. So there's also this term of critical mass. And this is something which we have to take very serious.
And we do, by the way, also one of the areas where the German Maritime Center is trying to help and assist the maritime community here in Germany. Final question. We talked about Europe and Germany, and we treated a little bit exchange as exchangeable terms in our conversation here. Now, you represent the German shipbuilding industry, not the European one. I think we both agree that the solution to many of our problems will lie in Europe. Do you think that we are in Europe, in the context of the shipbuilding industry, working together sufficiently well, or do we still spend too much time competing with each other rather than trying to join forces?
Well, competition is not necessarily something bad. So healthy competition is fine. No problem with that. The same goes, of course, also for our national landscape. So I think what is required is a respectful treatment of each other and this cooperative spirit. And there, I really have to say, that is existing. It's a really great community. People know each other. They talk to each other quite open because they all know the same struggle. They all know the challenges. So I think there is not so much where I would say we need to do this completely different. On policy level, of course, it's always a little bit different. There we need to scale up our understanding that we must get this organized together. That is not always working well.
So I think there is some obstacles, but also a lot of potential. I think you're fundamentally an optimist, Reinhard. So the glass is half full, not half empty, as far as I understand you. We're at a crucial moment. We'll continue to watch this space and see how it develops, hopefully for the better. Thank you very much for this conversation. I enjoyed it a lot.
Thank you. And optimism, even more, I'm convinced that we will significantly grow in the coming years because we have to. Europe has to. So I'm very optimistic. It's true. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Reinhard.